Chapter 10.
Deenan is an ecumenopolis, like Coruscant, a vast city sprawling over all the landmass and dependent on imports for food and raw materials. Coming from a rural planet with a very scattered population, I wasn't used to seeing an endless vista of buildings all lit up at night, and ships buzzing around them like they were flowers to be pollinated. The planet did kind of seem that way. A field of stiff, bright plants swarming with alien insects. Except it wasn't nearly as peaceful as a field might be. The visual clutter was dizzying, and even from orbit, I imagined I could hear the constant throb of it pulsing in my bones. Our coordinates led us to a rooftop berth on the edge of the Gramil district, which bordered the Lodos district where our target lay. Some arbitrary collection of streets formed the boundaries of Deenan's districts, which as far as I could tell were indistinguishable, but might hold obvious differences to long-term residents. Our Kupoan contact, Saket, had assured Admiral Akbar that landing in an adjacent district to the target would aid our escape, since each district had its own security and we'd be able to take advantage of the small lag that resulted from any departmental coordination. Our arrival shortly after sunset guaranteed an aerial slalom through rush hour traffic as people in speeders and shuttles tried to get home or start the night shift or snag a dinner they didn't have to cook for themselves. Leaving our two in our lodgings, we took a conservative droid taxi that was programmed for safety more than speed. And I didn't mind its cautious progress, since it gave me more time to appreciate the Lodos district at street level. Glowing signs for businesses were often presented in several alphabets in addition to Galactic Standard, many of them in letter forms that I didn't recognize at all. Once down on the street, we were buffeted by a cocktail of noises that ranged from pleasant music to shrill disagreement between a Nymoidian couple in matching gold robes. I felt a headache coming on, and I didn't know if it was from a bug I'd picked up earlier or overstimulation. I would put my credits on the latter. Nakari and I joined a throng of beings coursing down a narrow alley of stalls selling trinkets and flavored ices and stim sticks and all manner of goods that might be desirable but were strictly unnecessary. It broadened at one point to a miniature plaza anchored by a fountain in the middle. Aliens were sitting around the edge of it with food and drink purchased from nearby vendors. One of these, on the northwest corner of the plaza, sold noodles. And it was there we were supposed to make contact with the Kupoan spy, Saket.
"I don't want to think about that nastiness we're supposed to ask for," Nakari said as we took places at the end of the long line. Obviously, Saket's noodles were popular with the locals.
"You order it."
"What are you going to have?" She perused the menu above the hut, hand-painted in Galactic Standard and repeated in other alphabets.
"Buckwheat noodles and Nerf nuggets with onions."
When we got to the window, I saw two Kupoans working inside, one taking orders and one in a tiny kitchen area filling greased Flimsicard takeout boxes with noodles, meat, and vegetables. I wasn't sure if I was speaking to Saket or not, but I repeated Nakari's order and then ordered the Corellian buckwheat with rancor sauce. The Kupoan gave no outward sign that my order was unusual, beyond a small twitch of the primary and basal ears, scribbling on an old-fashioned paper ticket instead of the more common data pad, and growling something at the cook, lips curled over her large, flat teeth. She took my credits, and I began to fear that I would, in fact, be given something with rancor sauce on it. She produced a receipt from her register, and she scrawled on it.
"Order number 89,
the Kupoan growled at me, then sniffed wetly through her three nostrils, which did little to stimulate my appetite.
"Don't forget your receipt, friend."
She shoved it at me and twitched her head to my right.
"Pick up your food at the window, around the corner."
"Thanks," I replied, taking it from her. Nakari and I shuffled out of the way, and I looked down at the receipt. The number 89 was large and circled at the top, and then at the bottom in tiny script, it said, "Return at 0900 tomorrow." I showed it to Nakari.
"I doubt they'll be selling noodles that early," she said.
"I agree. Should give us plenty of time to talk."
"So what do we do now? I've done some shady things for my dad before, but never something quite like this."
"We follow through and get our noodles. We're just two hungry humans out for a bite."
"Excellent. I'm going to take a holler when you try the rancor sauce."
"Oh, yeah, right." My stomach turned slightly. "I'm not that hungry, actually." She smiled.
"We can get you something else."
"That might be better," I admitted.
"Order 89.
A voice called from the pickup window. I flashed my receipt, and the Kapoan working there, a third one I hadn't seen before, wearing a red bandana that draped protectively over the frequency filter organs between the primary and basal ears, took a look at it and thanked me, pushing forward two hot cartons and disposable eating sticks.
"Don't worry,"
she said in a low voice, her four dark eyes glinting with amusement.
"We just gave you two orders of the Nerf nuggets."
"Thanks," I said, truly grateful. "See you around." Tray in hand, I looked back at the plaza area and saw that there was nowhere to sit. Nakari spied a small pavilion farther along the path that had six picnic tables. Most of them were occupied, but one of them had room for two more. We carried our steaming cartons over to the table in question and asked the nice grand couple there if they minded sharing some space. Six eyes on stalk swiveled to regard us, and the two grand grunted agreeably.
"You can have it,"
one of them said.
"We were just finishing."
They scooped up their remainders and wished us a good evening. We discovered that the wooden table was well stocked with salt and pepper for our noodles, and the benches offered a wide range of splinters for our backsides.
"So, how much do you know already about the..."
Nakari paused, looked around, and lowered her voice.
"That special group your father was in."
Using the word Jedi out loud probably would not be wise here. It was doubtful that anyone would be interested in our dinner conversation, and unlikely that our voices could be picked out in the noise of the plaza. But there was no need to be careless either. Nakari shook some pepper over her Nerf nuggets.
"Or should I ask what it is you still need to learn?"
"Practically everything. Right now I can kind of feel the, I waited for Nakari's eyes to look up, and then I mouthed the word, "force." When she nodded her understanding, I resumed. "It gives me heightened reflexes and battles, and maybe a tiny bit of predictive ability, like I'm really good at guessing how the other guy is going to move next. But I'm sure that's just the first step into a larger world. There's that suggestive power we discussed earlier, for example, and I don't know how I'll ever make my own, weapon." She squinted an eye at me.
"Is that something you absolutely have to do?"
"I suppose not. I already have one. But the ability to make one would mean I have excellent control over the powers."
"How so?"
"You can't construct one without moving the focusing crystals with your mind."
"You mean telekinesis?"
"Yep. I can't seem to get the hang of that, but I should be able to, if this power flows through and around everything. Then manipulating it and using it to push and pull physical objects has to be part of the deal. For example, when I'm in a fight, it guides my actions, or at least influences my brain to guide my actions. Still, that's a concrete manifestation of its power, not me simply saying that I believe it's there. If it can physically affect me, then it should be able to physically affect other things as well. And I should be able to make that happen."
"Have you tried?"
"Yeah. I tried to move something small. I went after a little greasy vegetable on Rhodia.
Did you succeed?
Failed. Though in my own defense, I was interrupted. Nakari pulled out a noodle from her bowl and plopped it on the table between us. It lay there like an anemic grassworm.
Fine. Move the noodle.
What? Here?
Yes, here. Look at it, Luke. It is utterly lacking in strength, for it has been boiled into complete submission. It's not going to put up a fight. So move it.
Aw, you're making fun.
No, you can do it. Force that noodle to scoot over here. I won't interrupt. I'll just make yummy noises and enjoy my dinner.
So saying, she shoved an enormous portion into her mouth and moaned.
Oh, yeah,
she said around the food, a few noodles still dangling past her lips, twitching like tentacles crying for help.
Mmm, best Nerf nuggets ever. I have no idea what you're doing over there, because I'm just eating over here, being kind of gross about it, too.
I cracked a smile, which was probably her intention. There was no pressure, just friendly encouragement. I did feel encouraged, unlike on Rhodia, where I had felt almost overwhelmed at the enormity of all I didn't know. But I did know what everyone knows about noodles. They are not very good in contests of wills. Perhaps this single wet noodle was the perfect object on which to begin. And if nothing happened, no big deal. It was just dinner with a new friend. I relaxed, closed my eyes, stretched out with my mind, felt the force around me, and found the noodle. I imagined it moving away from me and back to the base of Nakari's carton. A detailed animation in my mind for perhaps half a minute, and I envisioned the force flowing in such a way as to make that happen. Nakari's whoop broke my concentration.
You did it!
I did? I opened my eyes and saw a damp squiggly line where the noodle had originally been resting, while the noodle itself lay in a completely different sine wave a few centimeters away from that position. It hadn't traveled all the way back to her carton as I had envisioned, but it had undeniably moved.
Yes, indeed! Look at you, you little noodle scooter.
Wait, are you messing with me? Did you move it while my eyes were closed? Nakari's brilliant smile disappeared, and she reached out with her bandaged hand to cover mine.
No, of course not. I wouldn't do that, Luke. I know this means a lot to you, and I swear you absolutely made that happen. It was a smooth undulation, like a snake taking a tour of the neighborhood.
Despite my disbelief in my own success, I sensed that she was telling the truth. It was an absolute certainty in my mind, as if the force had run a fact check for me. I didn't feel that way normally when speaking to people, but maybe my recent connection with the force had something to do with it. It had everything to do with moving the noodle, the reality and significance of which were finally hitting me. Incredible! I actually did it! Nakari's smile returned, a bit smug, and she pointed at me with her eating sticks.
Knew you could.
Did not.
Your noodles are getting cold.
Guess you're right about that. Despite the loss of a few degrees of heat, those were the best noodles I've ever had. To know that telekinesis was possible, not just for Jedi, but for me, gave me better hope for the future than I had enjoyed for a long time.